The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio, streaming on Facebook Live. Welcome. Welcome to The Big Show. I hate to do this, but I got to start with a little correction.
What's that?
Well, because I heard in your newscast the state Supreme Court's going to rule on the heroin death sites.
Mm.
And
I think I used a different term.
Right.
Mm.
And I heard you say the court has not made a decision yet.
Yes, that is true.
They've made a decision.
No, they haven't.
No, they haven't announced it. Though our state Supreme Court, everything is preordained. And up in Vancouver, B.C., George Soros is the funder of the heroin death site. And anything that is a left-wing cause is rubber-stamped by our state Supreme Court. So regardless of the legal merits of the argument, I guarantee that the state Supreme Court will rule for the heroin death sites. They just haven't announced it yet.
So would that same idea apply to the U.S. Supreme Court for anything, depending on who gets on?
No, our U.S. Supreme Court is not nine ideologues. There are people at both ends of the ideological spectrum, but our state Supreme Court is bought and paid for by certain unions and a political party. And so do we know when they're going to announce their decision?
No. I mean, generally we don't, but assuming the next couple months.
So mark my words, September 18th, 2018, they will rule in favor of the heroin death sites. Of that, I am certain. I will put money on that. I don't know the legal arguments on either side, but
I think it's just whether voters should be able to weigh on it. So then voters will have the final say.
Yeah, I don't think they want to give the voters the final say because the voters will say no to heroin death sites, and the Supreme Court doesn't want to risk losing the Soros-backed heroin death sites. And so, mark my words, absolutely guaranteed, every decision that goes between the state Supreme Court is preordained based on political ideology. Now, if I'm wrong, I'll just ignore the story. But I won't be wrong.
Oh, we won't let you.
I won't be wrong. Yeah, no, in fact, bring it up. Because I'd be thrilled. If they ever walk out of lockstep, if these jackbooted thugs ever fall out of lockstep as they march down our throats. I'm mixing up my metaphors now. But anyway, I assure you that they will rule for heroin death sites, and George Soros will be thrilled, and all the Democrats around here who want to increase the possibility of attracting addicts to our region, they will all be satisfied. So guaranteed how the state Supreme Court, and if you want to comment on this, you can text me. I always read all your texts. The Online Trading Academy text line 98973. We got a lot to do as we get into the big show today. Seahawks last night. And maybe this is why I'm a little amped up, because I had a very long broadcast day yesterday.
Yeah.
We started at noon with this show. We ended about midnight with the post-game show. So I'm running on adrenaline and Diet Coke today.
Which always makes it extra fun.
I'm ready to go. Brock Huard's going to drop by at 12:30. We will review last night's disappointing Seahawks game. There are a lot of interesting storylines. Are you familiar with the story of this linebacker the Seahawks signed on Thursday, Michael Kendricks?
The insider trade?
Yeah.
Yes.
It's a really interesting story because he's going to go to prison almost certainly. And he'll be sentenced in December or January. And the Cleveland Browns, as soon as they found out about his arrest for insider trading, where he profited about $1.2 million off some inside info, but it was 3 or 4 years ago.
And he's not denying that it happened, right?
He's pretty much admitted his guilt. And the Cleveland Browns, as soon as they heard about his arrest, they said, okay, we're done with him. And they're the worst team in football, but the Seahawks, they have a lot of trouble at linebacker right now with injuries, and the Seahawks said, we'll bring him aboard. And I don't think This is another thing people could text us about. Like, if it was a physical assault of another person, I would be outraged if the Seahawks prioritized football over that crime.
That's still a felony.
Insider trading, and it's a serious crime. And like I said, he could face up to 15 years as a first-time offender. He'll likely get 25 to 36 months. But I thought Paul Moyer made a really good point last night on our post-game show. He said Martha Stewart, of course, went to prison for insider trading.
Mm-hmm.
But if Martha Stewart offered to help you plan a dinner party, you'd probably still say yes.
Did he really use that analogy?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my God.
So, even though she committed that crime, you'd still let Martha come and help you plan a dinner party?
That's me as a private citizen. We're talking about a team, PR, the whole bit.
Company. Yeah. So anyway, Brock talked to Pete Carroll about that this morning on Brock and Salk. So we've got clips of that, and we'll talk with Brock Huard about that coming up at 12:30 this afternoon. Let's get right into the big lead.
The big lead, Bizarro World.
I am telling you, I was shaking. I got home after midnight last night. Now I got to get caught up on all of the news. So I'm on my DVR and I'm watching our news partners over at Channel 7. So did you watch this whole Target rampage story?
Yes.
This is unbelievable what happened. So at the Target store downtown, a guy who is a career criminal, he went on not only a stealing and vandalism spree, but he also did something that easily could have killed people. And our friend Gary Horker at Cairo 7, he did the story. They got the video throughout the store of what this guy did. A 41-year-old guy named Jason Lewis, as I said, career criminal. And here's what went down in the downtown Seattle Target store.
Seattle detectives say this man, lugging heavy duffel bags full of stolen electronics at the downtown Seattle Target, is career criminal 41-year-old Jason L. Lewis. By the time a Target loss prevention worker tries to stop Lewis, he's already been on a wild, nonstop 15-minute destructive robbery spree where he terrorized workers and customers.
And all of this was captured on the store's surveillance camera. So one of the things he did was he went to the electronics department.
As Lewis confronts salespeople up in electronics, they're all bracing themselves. And when one of them stands their ground, he headbutts that worker while screaming. Within 30 seconds, all the workers are told to back off for their safety. They leave Jason Lewis alone behind the counter. He then begins to push over and drag store displays, and he uses one of them as a weapon, swinging it like a sledgehammer trying to break a secure container loaded with iPads and Apple Watches.
Yeah, so this Apple display case, it's locked, and this guy's trying to smash it, and when he couldn't smash it to get in...
It's been 5 minutes since Lewis started his display demolition without being stopped in a store full of customers. And here it gets a lot worse. Lewis slides and shoves the display onto and then right down an escalator while people were riding on it. One customer hustles to get out of the way while another pauses to look back as the display case comes crashing down to the floor below with Jason Lewis in hot pursuit.
And if you've seen this video, this display case, it's got to weigh over 100 pounds.
Oh, easy.
And so he does. He kind of rolls it and shoves it down the aisle to the escalator. It slides down the escalator, gathering speed. There are a couple people near the bottom of the escalator. If they had been up high on the escalator, they likely would have been killed by this thing. And the person closest to it had to kind of run to get away from it sliding down. And then the guy just leaves the store after being confronted by a store security guy.
After 15 minutes, there are still no police here, and the Target loss prevention manager can only try to reason with Lewis. Jason Lewis bolted out of the store and into the night.
And here's what this guy got away with for the time being.
So get this, he left this doorway and was arrested later on that night for car prowling, but a judge let him out of the King County Jail 19 hours later. SPD says he went back into this Target store two more times, went on two more stealing sprees before SPD finally tackled him and arrested him after 3 days of terrorism here.
Can anybody, in God's name, and I mean this with all seriousness, how does a judge let this man go 19 hours later after this violent spree that could have easily killed somebody? Then he goes back, terrorizes the same store two more times. A judge let him go. So that's question number one. I mean, I will never be able to figure out where we've gotten with our legal system here, that a judge would let such a dangerous person go.
Well, and given that he also has a long criminal history that includes threats of terrorism and assault with a deadly weapon.
Yes. Question number two, and I don't want to get in trouble here, but as I was watching this, I was thinking about our city. And I don't want to get all sexist here, but where are the real men in our city? How in the world do, and I know that there's a danger because.
Well, what do you mean by that, though?
What I mean is, how does some customer, you know, not go to some other guys and say, hey, we got to do something about this? Maybe one of them runs to Sporting Goods and grabs a baseball bat and cracks this guy over the head or disables him somehow. But the fact that people let this happen, I think.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not kidding.
You would try to tackle this guy.
I don't know. But I think if I was with some guys, I don't believe I would watch this guy headbutt a female employee.
I'm wondering where's security?
Endanger the lives. Well, the security, they're all neutered. They can't do anything. They're told.
But they're private.
They're told that you got to let them go. You know, like
if security's not going to do it, it's just someone who happens to be shopping in the store is going to do it.
And here's the problem. Yeah, you confront him, and maybe he's got a knife, your life's in risk. I understand all of that.
And you have a family, and they're depending on you.
I understand all of that. I do not know. I'm telling you, Ursula, 30, 40 years ago, I don't think everybody just stands by and watches a career criminal headbutt women, endanger the lives of people. And I just think we have become the most wussified region in the world. And we don't have any real men anymore who are willing to step in and do something about this. Remember the story we had a couple days ago? In the Fremont neighborhood, there's a drug RV that's parked there. And they spray painted a piece of plywood. And it said, buy drugs here. And go look at my blog, because I got this exclusively from a listener. And Seattle police, 3 hours later, came out. They go and talk to the people in the RV with the buy drugs now sign. They don't do anything about it. They leave the sign sitting there. And if I'm a father with kids, I am making this gender specific, because I think that men still have some kind of responsibility for their families and for their fellow citizens. And I don't know how a real man, if you've got kids in that neighborhood and there's a drug RV and they got a sign that says buy drugs here and the police won't do anything about it, so we'll just let it go. We'll just let them continue selling their wares. Does that happen in a city that's got people who are willing to stand up for their families and for their fellow citizens?
I think you're opening up a whole can of worms, and I think the last thing I would want, you know, I have two boys. I'm married to a husband I love.
And your husband's a real man.
Yeah, but guess what? I would not want them, you know, and why does it have to be a man? Why not anyone who sees this try to call, you know, call 911, stay on 911?
Because that's the role we used to adopt.
You don't anymore. You don't know what people do not value life anymore. So if I try to or if my husband tries to intervene, I don't know what he's going to encounter.
First of all, in my neighborhood, the cops wouldn't allow what Seattle police allowed with the drug RV. And they certainly would have intervened long before this, you know, terror rampage at the Target, because we have a great police department. I just met another cop.
Well, and Seattle police are a great police department. They just need to be allowed to do what they should.
No, they've been completely neutered. They've been completely neutered by leadership, and they are depolicing. And some of it is because of leadership. Some of it is because they're afraid that the feds are going to crawl up their rear if they write
because
up
they
any
have.
Kind of report. And so Seattle police and Seattle crime, depolicing has led to escalating crime. But
I think that's the bigger problem versus what happened to all the men in the world.
But if the police aren't going to do anything, then who's going to stand up for our family? And I'm telling you right now.
You know what? And I think it's just we all need to care. If I were in that Target, I would just be calling 911, 911, 911.
Didn't do a thing.
No, you know what people did do is take out their phones and start recording it, though. That's the difference.
Yeah,
it used to be people trying
now.
To stop, but that's what you do now. Because you can see people in the video, surveillance video, recording him. And so they're like 10 feet from him.
If that drug RV was on my block when my girls were little, I would have confronted them. I would have had the weapon that I needed to make sure that,
and if this strung
that
out,
I walk away from it.
If this strung out druggie would have stabbed you to death, would that have been worth it?
I would have had more range with my weapon than they have with theirs. And there's no way I would allow a drug RV with a sign that says buy drugs now. If the police aren't going to do anything, I would make sure that I and my neighbor, and that was kind of like that Magnolia story that we had exclusively, where a guy's terrorizing a woman and claiming the house. And remember, I talked to her brother, and he said, yeah, we're former military. We know where this guy lives, and we're going to go take care of this. Because the police are not taking care of things, and I wouldn't allow it. Buy drugs now, RV on my block. And I'm not pretending for one second that I'm the toughest guy in the world. But if that happened when my children were little girls, and I thought we had some drug sellers across the street from me, there's no way that I and my neighbors would allow that to happen if the police were doing nothing. At that Target, you see a woman get headbutted.
Yes, awful.
And everybody, I'll record it. I'll put it on YouTube. We're so wimpified, and I'll tell you right now, this better be a message, too, to our city council, the clown show that is, and our mayor. Some people have had it, and there are going to be some citizens that are going to snap, and it's because of the inaction and the depolicing. It's, that was infuriating to watch. Did I tell you I'm all hepped up on caffeine today?
Have another Diet Coke.
Oh, man. I'd love to hear what you think about all of this. You can text us at 98973. It's the Online Trading Academy text line. 98973. That is your big lead for today.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
I got to lighten things up a little bit. Brock Huard, the Monday Monson quarterback, a special Tuesday edition. We'll talk about last night's Seahawks game. Then I got a lot of other news to get to as well as the Dory Monson Show gets rolling. Well, it is Tuesday afternoon, and that, of course, means it's time for the Monday Monson quarterback. Since the Seahawks had a Monday night game, Brock Huard makes a very special appearance on the big show. Good afternoon, sir.
Yeah, Monday, Tuesday, kind of all out of whack, kind of wonky, like the Seahawk offense yesterday, just absolutely out of whack on a day, Dory, where their defense played their butts off.
Yeah, they really did, especially when you're missing maybe the best linebacker tandem in the league. You got a guy who you just signed on Thursday. You got rookies out there. That was pretty impressive defensively.
Yeah, it was. It gave up 2 yards a rush. You know, the QB got out a couple times. Bradley McDougal continues to just play phenomenal ball. I mean, he's awesome. Shaquille looked like Richard Sherman. He gets 2 takeaways. His team's gotten 5 takeaways, Dory, in their first 2 games. That paces to the 2013 defense that had 39 over the course of their 16. So they're given what you want. They played so stinking hard. They're on the field forever. Yeah. They give up 17 points. That's it. You give up 17 points. If you told me yesterday All right. When we chatted and we did the pregame show, I said, hey, B, because he called me B. He said, hey, B, guess what?
Yes.
17 points and 2 takeaways. That's what the defense is going to give up. I'm going to say, great. Seahawks are going to win. Like 28-17, 24-17. I mean, surely the offense, they've got a lot of pieces back, and that's a group that is explosive and good. They're going to be 1-1, and all is going to be right in the world.
Yeah. Didn't quite work out that way. That's because the offense had more than its share of troubles.
Russell takes the shotgun snap again. This time he goes down. Trips over his offensive lineman as he's trying to step up in the pocket as everything crashed in on top of him. That's the 5th sack, a 6-yard loss.
That was the 5th sack in the first half. They ended up with 6. It's the first time since 2007 that any quarterback in the NFL has had back-to-back 6 sacks games. So what is going on there, Brock?
Yeah, I think from my perspective, Dory, just from the QB perspective, is that the Russell's trying to do too much. He's either trying to, he's kind of in between in both worlds, which is a place you never want to be in any sport, really, in anywhere, I think, in life, where you just feel stuck and in between, where he's in between, do I just throw it away and live to play another day, or am I in between, I try to keep the play alive and I scramble around, and right now he's just like a sandwich, man, and getting sandwiched because he's in between, and it is way too many negative plays.
Well, and one of the biggest negatives, that was really the game-turning play of the game, something that Russell Wilson has not done since his rookie year.
Russell takes the shotgun snap and throws it that way, and it's going to go the other way. Russell's going to chase him. Can he catch him? He gets there and slows him down, but it's going to be a touchdown. Prince Amukamara, 47-yard interception return for a touchdown.
A pick six, and this morning on Brock's show, they had Pete Carroll on, and they talked about what happened on that play.
He just trusted that he had it. I mean, it had been open together. The corner was back, and Mukamara was backed off nice, just like he's supposed to, and he just squatted on the running back. And generally, because there's a seam route going off inside, the zone guys, go, they fall off, and they have to honor the seam. But in this one, they were matched up. He didn't have to, and he didn't. And so he just came out and ripped it on rhythm. And that it was just a terrific play and a guess by the guy, and he made it, and it came out right for them.
So give me your quarterback perspective on that one.
Yeah, Russell's got to see that cheating corner over there. That little squatty body corner was sitting on everything all night long. He was sitting on Brandon Marshall. He was sitting on everybody. They tried to go over the top against him a few times with some calls, and it didn't happen. They played a different zone coverage, and that time, that corner, who's played a lot of ball, and in his mind, Dory, right, I'll give you the cornerback perspective. That corner is thinking, Russ, I really hope you throw this hitch route to the running back. Because when a running back gets out there in an empty set, 99 out of 100 times he runs a hitch route. And not a very good one, because he's a running back and not a receiver.
And in this case, a rookie.
Yes, yeah. And Michael Bumpus was great with you post-game yesterday. Because a veteran receiver, Brandon Marshall, he would feel that guy just squatting and chasing and running. And he would get to his inside and at least collision it and find an incompletion. But a rookie running back is just going to do what's supposed to do on paper and run 6 yards and kind of drift and sit out there. And Prince Amukamara is like, Russell, throw it, man. Russell, throw it. Throw it, throw it, throw it. I mean, there was no hesitation. He just pulled, took all the risk in the world, because if Carson's running like a double move or anything but that route, he's right by him. But instead, the Prince guessed right, took it to the house, and you're right. That was the game-defining play, and one that Russell just has to see. You have to just – the pre-snap is great. There's two reads, pre-snap and post-snap. And they happen so doggone fast. But in that post-snap read on that route, Dory, you've got to read that corner's first step. And if he's flying, you can't make that throw.
And then the other thing that you and I were communicating a little bit during the game last night, I know a lot of fans were quizzical. Chris Carson has been, you know, labeled the team's number one running back. And we don't see him after the middle point of the second quarter. So everybody's wondering, is he in the doghouse? Did he do something that ticked off the coaches? Is he hurt? Is he banged up? Here's what Pete Carroll told Brock and Salk this morning about the whole Chris Carson situation.
I just looked at him on the side. He looked like he was kind of worn down a little bit. And I knew that he was a factor in special teams, and I just missed it. He wasn't – Brian had taken him off on a couple things, and so because he was running the ball well. I just missed it. And I thought that's what happened when I looked at him. But it wasn't like to bench him. It wasn't like to, I was disappointed with him. And it just – the plays came on. We still wanted to see the other guys too and mix them in, and that's just the way it went. You know, so I didn't read it right. And when I commented about that, I wasn't clear.
And I will tell you, bro, I try to, perceive these things through whatever prism of experience I have. And when I was coaching, I would have players occasionally get lost on the bench. I was just so focused on the game, I wasn't thinking about rotation. But I'd have assistant coaches who would come up and say, hey, you got to get Janie back in the game. And I'm trying to figure out the communication, if it is truly as Pete described, that he just kind of got lost on the bench. So what's your thoughts on all of that?
Yeah, yes, I think all of that is true, and frankly and sadly just can't happen. You know, it just, he's your, Chris Carson may be your most dynamic player offensively. Tyler Lockett is close, but I think for pound for pound at 230 pounds, and his hurdle job in Denver was pretty representative of that. And in the big play that you feel like is coming every time that he's got the ball in his hands, he's got to be on the field. So wherever the communication breakdown was, OC, running backs, head coach, special teams coach, that just, you know, that's one that frankly just can't happen, because that difference maker has to be on the field when it matters. And, you know, Pete owning that right away. And the minute he walked into the room with us, you know, knew, and because I think there's been a lot of buzz since his comment post game that he only had two special team snaps, that Pete needed to kind of get that right and needed to clarify, and I don't think that mistake will happen again. Now, having said that, if you listen to the entirety of Pete this morning, you know, Rashad Penny's lost 8 to 10 pounds in a week. You know, he's all of a sudden healthy and all of a sudden realizing, like, I'm not just a fat and happy rookie here coming off a broken finger in camp. Like, I've got to, this NFL is now. There's nothing promised to you, even as a first round pick.
Sure.
And I got to get my game right. And he did look better, much better than he did the opening week.
Then the other thing I was really fascinated you talking with Pete about this morning is, and I'm looking forward to talking to him about it when I visit with him on Friday. But Michael Kendrick, and in case people don't know the situation, Michael Kendrick was with the Eagles a year ago. He was at training camp with Cleveland Browns when it was announced that he was involved in an insider trading situation. The Browns immediately released him. He made about $1.2 million off of insider trading. He admitted to it. The Browns say, we're done with you because of the decisions you made. And the Seahawks, needing desperate help with their injuries at linebacker, they signed him on Thursday. And here is what Pete told Brock and Salk this morning about that.
So we did. Yeah, we talked through it, and it happened quite a long while ago. He realized that he made a mistake. He admitted to his mistake and paid back whatever he needed to pay back as well, showing the kind of concern and remorse that somebody that erred should show. And then it's taken, you know, it's 4.5 years from when that all took place. So it's been weighing on him heavily, as we can all imagine, and it will continue to.
And this guy's going to go to prison. The sentencing's going to be in probably December or January. I thought Paul Moyer had a good line last night. He said, you know, Martha Stewart went to prison for insider trading, but if she offered to help me with my dinner party, I'd say yes. So, and it's not like, you know, it's not like it was a, I don't want to minimize, because insider trading, it's a, you know, it's an insidious white collar crime, but it's not the same as the physical assault of another person. And I don't think people are as upset by this as, you know, some of the people who have committed physical assaults.
Yeah, and, you know, he's going to pay his retribution and his fines and all the money back and everything else, and we'll see about the jail time and the service and what any of that is going to look like. And in the meantime, he's a phenomenal football player. I mean, Dory, to do what he did in 3 days' time to come into here, to get to understand this system, to understand his teammates, and play 54 snaps of the highest quality backup linebacker snaps we've seen in 10 years.
Yeah.
I mean, when KJ and Bobby have been out over the last few years, and they've been out, the defense has tanked. They have just not been able to do anything. And Austin Calitro last night and Kendricks last night were awesome. And while that didn't help them with the win last night, I can assure you, over the course of the season, if he's not suspended by the league, those guys are going to pay major dividends over the course of the year, and they're going to need them.
Yep, indeed. All right. Well, they need everybody, because they're 0-2. They got the Cowboys coming to town on Sunday, and that's about as crucial as an early season game gets now.
Oh, man, there's no question. And the challenge is when you get sacked six times, you get sacked six times, and when you fumble in the fourth quarter, and when you throw a pick six in the fourth quarter, man, it all adds up, Dory. All of the pressure mounts, and Russ is one tough cookie, physically and mentally, over his 7 years. But this is a new arena. This is no coordinator familiarity, a lot of new receivers, a lot of newness, and a lot of weight that's sitting on number three's shoulders. And, man, is it going to feel, I think, very pressure-packed against the Cowboys with no margin now. I mean, you cannot lose this game Sunday at home. I think he knows it. I think that building's going to know it. And it's going to be one intense atmosphere against pretty good Dallas Cowboy defense.
That analysis right there, that's why we bring the guy I like to call B in here. Brock Huard is the Monday Monson quarterback. Special Tuesday edition. Thanks, Brock. We'll talk to you next week.
Anytime, D.
Brock Huard joins us, and he's brought to you by our friends at IRG Physical and Hand Therapy. And we have lots more straight ahead. It's the Dory Monson Show. Take it, B.
Rolls on, rolls on, rolls on, rolls on, rolls on.
Oh, there's so much fake news out there. Remember the U.S. Open tennis tournament a couple of weeks ago where Serena Williams just went crazy? First of all, she's getting hand signals from her coach, which is illegal. So she gets a warning. Then she smashed her racket, which is an automatic violation, so she lost a point. Then she started yelling at the official, and she called him a thief, and she was penalized a game. And then the storyline in the media, because there is media groupthink, CBS and ESPN, USA Today, CNN, Serena Williams is the victim of sexism and racism because a tennis official punished her. And, you know, here was some of what was going on the court.
If he gives me a thumbs up, he's telling me to come on. We don't have any code, and I know you don't know that. I don't cheat to win. I'd rather lose. I'm just letting you know.
Even though her coach admitted that he was coaching her, which is illegal, she said no. Then she demanded an apology from the chair official.
You need to make an announcement that I didn't get coaching.
And then she got penalized again. Okay, verbal abuse. And then at a press conference, she said it was because she was a woman.
I can't sit here and say I wouldn't say he's a thief because I thought he took a game from me. But I've seen other men call other umpires several things. And I'm here fighting for women's rights and for women's equality.
Okay. So everybody in the media, because there is media groupthink, and how they cover stories is based on like a PC point system. She's a woman. She's a new mom. She's African-American. And the media was all wrong. The New York Times, a guy named Christopher Clary there, he dug up statistics from the past 20 years in Grand Slam tennis matches. Men have been fined 1,500 times compared to 500 times for women. Men got 649 fines for breaking rackets, only 99 for women. Men for an audible obscenity were fined 344 times compared to 140 for women. In other words, men get punished, and maybe they do it more often, but they get punished far more often than women for all the things that Serena Williams was complaining were sexist. Fake news that everyone in the media adopted that storyline. Fastest 15 is next.